Welcome to Ag Tech Talk, Agribusiness Global's podcast exploring the latest technological innovations, tools, and services that are moving the crop input community forward. I'm your host, Senior Editor Dan Jacobs. Each episode, we talk with industry experts for their insights on ag tech solutions being developed around the world and how they could impact your business. Whether it's ag technology you'll find in the field, in the office, on a tablet or phone, or in the air, we'll talk about it here. Thanks for joining us. Today, we're talking with Robin Raskin, CEO and founder of the Virtual Events Group. She has a long and varied career covering technology. Robin is talking with us today about the metaverse and digital twins and how those virtual worlds will be impacting our daily lives in general and the ag industry specifically. So thank you for being with us today. We are talking with Robin Raskin, who is the founder of the Virtual Events Group. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what that is and how that maybe differs? I mean, we're talking on Zoom right now. How does that differ from Zoom or Teams or any of those other apps that have come along in the last year or two?
I think it started at, actually, I was the owner of a live events group that I had the good fortune, or somebody was sitting on my shoulder looking out for me. I sold it right before the pandemic. Pandemic comes, everybody starts asking me, what do we do? How long is this, how do we exhibit? How do we get our messages out? So I said, you know what? I'm going to start this new business. It's called the Virtual Events Group. And it really is about, even now that we're back at live events, it is about being digital first, tech forward. So it is about the tools that you use. Nobody wants contact check-ins anymore. They all want to be contactless. Everybody wants to be able to record, publish, and get it out there. So all those skills that we learned about how to meet virtually, Zoom included, but there are many others that have everything from ticketing to post-event analysis to AI now to draft your agenda, to look at carbon footprints. So they're pretty robust tools. And many people, it's become sort of de rigueur to have a virtual component, a hybrid component to your live event, whether it happens simultaneously or it happens afterwards, or you have short meetings during the year with one big get together in person. People are experimenting. And so we look at the Virtual Events Group. The website is a database of like 700 products that you can use, sorted by category. Then we have monthly meetings to discuss these things. This one coming up is on AI and virtual events. And it is funny, just this morning, I asked ChatGPT to write me a request for proposal for a virtual event, and I specified the number of people and the name, and blah, blah. It was pretty good. Needed my help, but pretty good. So Virtual Events Group is really just to help people meet, as I like to say, the Marriott, the Metaverse, or Mars. We don't care where, it just should be tech forward because it's enormously helpful.
Okay. All right. So we don't expect, now that people are going back into the office, back into, like you say, live events, you don't expect these types of virtual meetings to go away.
No, on the contrary. I think travel budgets have been slashed, as we know. People are super aware of carbon footprints, particularly on flying. And so my fear is actually that they'll have people staffing booths and they'll have CEOs there, but this middle group needs training and they need to see products. And there's a large swath of people. Corporations are now doing monthly meetings that are fancier than television productions. So I think the contrary is going to happen. The medical industry, the banking industry, I mean, events that are virtual, concerts, I think we're just going to become... It ties into the metaverse, the physical and the digital. This younger generation will blend it very seamlessly and make a decision. We're going to do this one real, but people will not go to as many events as they did before the pandemic. I think until the economy recovers and until we solve the carbon problem.
I probably shouldn't share that with my bosses since I know they're planning a couple of in-person events coming up here. But We have done some virtual stuff as well. So it's good to have these kinds of platforms. Your history, though, obviously is in tech. Looking at your LinkedIn profile, and I think you mentioned it when you spoke at the Vision conference for us a few months ago. You were the editor of PC Magazine back, I think, when Bill Gates introduced DOS.
Yeah.
Everybody knows who he is now, but back then, he might not have been quite as well known. Can you kind of talk about that experience?
Yeah. Well, it was kind of, there was young Bill Gates, and there was IBM, and then there was Apple, and then slightly thereafter, if you remember, there was OS2, and IBM thought they had a grander vision, and Bill built Windows instead. So this whole thing, there was DOS had like 700 versions, and so I kind of grew up in this industry watching it be built. And when I was the editor of PC Magazine, you probably had a choice of 150 computers that you could buy, desktop computers, and then that kept dwindling to, they're now four or five, and that is like a business cycle, I think. So it was, I have to say, there was never a day of PC Magazine that was boring. And I still feel the same way about tech. I am as excited about tech today as then. Although I think as I age, I've learned to think about the implications of it more, and I remember having an early conversation with Bill Gates because I had written a column that women would be free to work where they wanted to work. And he said, "You really think there's going to be a computer on every desk in America?" And I said, I really do. And now I think there's going to be an AI on every desk in America. And that begs more questions than the PC. And as PCs, when I started writing about them, they were not connected and there were no mobile phones. So the world is, it's kind of like, if you think about it, like the right from horses to the Wright brothers. It's that sort of magnitude of change.
Sure. And you mentioned AI, and we'll talk a little bit about that a little bit later. But one of the things that you talked about, or the thing that you presented at the Vision conference, was the metaverse and digital twins. And I guess my question, to start with is, can you explain what those are for somebody who may not be familiar? And also, are they different? Are they different? Or is it just another term for the same thing?
Yeah, no, there are a lot of terms bandied about and without a lot of clarity. But the important thing, I think, is to think about the metaverse as a sliding scale. There are metaverse-like things that your kids are probably in and don't even know it's a metaverse. Roblox. So think about or Fortnite, or those are the two big examples. So think about a metaverse as its primary characteristic is an immersive 3D experience that you go to. Behind that, there's a Web3 world with currencies and blockchains and ways of doing commerce. And but I think the metaverse is everything from, another misconception, you don't need extra hardware to be in the metaverse. You can have a more metaverse-like experience if you put on VR goggles and you are totally immersed. But the majority of people just go on their computers, which are for now mostly 2D, and have an experience. Digital twins, I would define as a metaverse can defy the laws of our real world. No gravity, the ocean could be the sky could be the ocean, I can be a pink unicorn, you can be a gray elephant, whatever we want to do. A digital twin is an exact replica of the physical world. And where that gets useful for people in agriculture, people in city planning, people in museums, is to build factories, is to build the exact process that they want to duplicate and see how it works before they lift a single nail or plant a single crop.
Okay. I guess the question then would be, is anybody actually doing that in agriculture right now?
And there are two things happening that I know of. One are, the tractor companies like the John Deere's and Caterpillars are not so much using a metaverse, but they are working with Internet of Things, cameras, GIS photos, satellite imagery, so that you can actually ride your tractor down and get a full 360-degree view of your farm. You can, with IoT devices, which are the Internet of Things, which are sensors, you can test for the acidity or of the soil. You can test for rainwater. You can water just where you need it and nowhere else. You can make sure you're putting any pesticides where you need it and nowhere else. So you can be a lot more efficient and cost-effective and sustainable using systems like that. The other place I'm seeing it used are in digital twins of cities. And I'm going to point to Seoul and Singapore as two really good examples. So, you know, Singapore like grows no food, basically. They have this problem that everything's imported. Well, now they have basically redesigned the city in a digital twin so that anything that can hang anywhere between buildings, in pits on the streets, will be an urban garden and will grow food. And their plan is to actually, I believe it's 30%, to grow 30% of their own food as they phase into this metaverse. So, and the first phase is up there now. You can actually walk through Singapore and be a tourist, and you can do certain government things there now, get visas and attend meetings. So they are pushing the limit on what you can do. And I think it's a good example of a digital twin that's being used now. A lot of others are games. There's one in India, I believe it's called Asigaro, Asygaro. And there's tokens that you get for doing the right thing in agriculture. And your product goes on the blockchain. So you can actually verify that this grain was grown here and only these people touched it. And this is the cargo ship it came over on, and sort of track the life cycle of your product. So you're going to see a lot of manifestations of a metaverse-ish world. Does that make sense?
Sure. Absolutely. We see a lot of more savvy consumers. They want to know where their foods are coming from. They want to know, you know, they listen to all the problems we've had with the supply chain over the last couple of years. Is this going to help a grower or a country sort of prove and I'm not sure what the word I'm looking for here is, but like manage their farm so that they can say, look, hey, yeah, we're sustainable. We didn't use these products or, you know.
Yeah, no. I think you're seeing it so much. First of all, augmented reality. You know, if you have a mobile phone and a QR code, you know everything in your that's in your food. And that people are, I see them in grocery stores and, you know, supermarkets all the time. I'm also starting to see a customer loyalty to people that are. So if you think about a farm the way you think about a retail store, there's a customer loyalty. And the more people understand where your product came from, who grows it, and you see it on the, you know, the large agriculture sites now. Take me to your people. Show me how you grow this. I want to know more. I want to be more informed about the choices I make of things to put in my body. And I really want to try and do the right thing. You know, everything from, is this compostable? Or did you use pesticides? So I think people have become much more aware. And I think farmers have an opportunity to translate that awareness into storytelling. I actually met a farmer storyteller the other day. And this is what he's from Canada, and they're building a communal farm. And he believes the power that will sustain them is in telling their story to people who come there. And the more farms can spread that message of being in the present, you have a new generation that's digitally super fluid. They go back and forth. They'll look things up. They'll play on your. I actually believe, not today, but you will go to Decentraland or Sandbox, and I can own a piece of your farm and tend it. You know, let's say you give me an NFT, which is a non-fungible token, which just can be a little art representation of what I own, and then I I play Tamagotchi meets farm, my sort of thing. What if I change the pH of the soil? And people will play this, a gamification. Some of the big companies are doing it super successfully in retail. If you go to Roblox, I'll use it as an example again, Gucci's there, Walmart's there, Forever 21 is there, playing games. I believe Del Monte's there, but I could be wrong. Playing games that help customers learn about where this stuff is coming from.
Sure. What will it take for Joe Farmer, you know, not the big giant corporations that maybe have a lot of money or backing behind them, but, and I don't, you know, and not the 1 acre farmer, but, you know, the farmer that needs to embrace this technology. What, I mean, is it expensive? Is it just a matter of dedication? I mean, what does it take?
So I think it takes just simple steps. And I know like a farmer's life isn't busy enough, but simple steps, like an Instagram account, you know, step one, this is our farm. This is what we do every day. You cannot believe how many people are fascinated by this and interested. This, you know, so I think, you know, my advice is start small, post once a day. And if one of your kids on the farm happens to be playing a lot of games in their spare time, I would use them. The kids all tell me, you know, 10-year-olds, 12-year-olds, their favorite games are simulations. I want to build a lemonade stand. I want to build a factory. I want to make something. They love this stuff. They've always loved this stuff since Monopoly. So a simple game is, you know, not such a bad idea. But I think, you know, Instagram and social media, and I call out Instagram, you can do TikTok, but it's a unique talent. I think about all the social media out there. You can't do them all. It's kind of time consuming. You don't want to hire somebody, but just start to show an authentic side to your life. And I think that creates a bond in every industry, and it should farming as well.
Yeah, I think one of the early popular games on Facebook was a game called Farmville, right? Was that sort of a precursor to all this?
Absolutely. And everybody played Farmville and everybody loved it. And, you know, Second Life also, there were farms there. So, you know, gaming patterns repeat themselves. But now, you know, really stupid animal tricks. You know, everybody's watching cats and dogs. Who's watching the goats and cows? You know, I mean, so I think that mobile phone, and there is a whole creator economy, and it's actually rather large. And I think having a mobile phone and a little bit of spare time to get your message out is the place to start. And then, you know, I think there's really no need to be building a digital twin of your farm yet. But I always look for people who are bigger than me who might want me to be like part of their world.
Sure. I'm just wondering if, you know, with, you mentioned the Internet of Things. I mean, growers have sensors all over their property. They have, like, you know, the cameras and everything. And, you know, they, if they have a digital twin, you know, they don't need to call that consultant to actually come to the farm itself, right? They can use the digital twin with the sensor that says, okay, this area has got, you know, is low in nutrients, needs a little extra, you know, whatever it is. Is that somewhere where we're headed, maybe?
Definitely. I don't want to paint too rosy a picture. You know, IoT devices like sensors and cameras out in the field, they do malfunction. I mean, there's no doubt that we need more ruggedized equipment. But yes, you can get this feedback and then act on it constantly. And, you know, from rodent control, you know, to I think it can save a lot of time and a lot of money, but I don't want to paint the picture, you know, that John Deere is saving the world, because in fact, they charge a lot to come out for a service call on these things. Although many of the tractors, like many electric cars, are self-repairing to a degree. They'll do a hard reset. They'll change, they'll give you a software update. So I think the other thing the farming industry can think about is investment in equipment can be seen longer term than it used to be because of so much of it being in the software as a smart machine. And as the technology improves, your tractor will actually improve, which is kind of, wrapping your head around something different. So I think, definitely look at, the IoT devices, but while you're monitoring your field, put up a webcam and show the world. It's amazing how many people want to watch vegetables grow that can't, and how many parents want to show their kids how vegetables grow that can't. So it's sort of thinking a little bit like the stuff that you do, kind of being your own publicist a bit for now. Then I think when the tools get easier, digital twins will become much easier to build. They'll become like building Lego blocks,
Sure.
Like we're not there.
Yeah, I know we're in its infancy here, and maybe so we're talking a little bit ahead of the game. But is it simply cost or complexity that might slow the adoption of this technology, or is it or is it just a matter of time until it becomes more understood?
I mean, right now, cost, these headsets are large and uncomfortable and unwieldy. Augmented reality is really used. If you have a mobile phone, and once a day you are checking a QR code of something. Here in where I live in New York City, you can actually walk through the city streets and it's all augmented reality. So I can shine my phone at the Empire State Building, it'll give me the whole history. And so you're going to start to see augmented realities easier. So you see that be adopted more quickly. Other barriers to adoption, 5G. A lot of rural farms just don't have enough bandwidth. And believe me, the network, the carriers of the world see this as both a problem and an opportunity. Satellite imagery is going to get better and be more open source so that farmers will be able to get an overview of their land in great detail. There'll be better tools for managing water scarcity. So I'm really optimistic, and I'm not optimistic in every area that technology can help, like education, for example, but in farming, I do believe it can help. The price will come down. The barrier's always time also. You have a busy life and you have to find the time to master a new set of skills. And that's, I remember when I ran PC Magazine, we got a Novell LAN, and this thing sat in the office box for like 6 months. And finally I said, we've got to try and connect. We've just got to do this. And today's connecting. Everybody's going to put down whatever else they're doing. And it's hard, right? It's hard to change a process once it's familiar.
Sure. I think I've talked to a lot of people, and the recurring frame is growers are very traditional, right? They want proof. They want they want to see it in action. They want to know it's not, even if it's a good idea, they want to know it's not going to cost them. It's going to make them money. It's going to help them.
Yeah.
So,
and I don't blame them. And I think the other thing they can do is start. People want their business, and there's nothing wrong with putting together a request for proposal. Here's what I'd like. Even if you're a small farm, there are small businesses who, whether it's solar or whether it's IoT devices, who want to work with you. But I think it's to be very clear on what you want from them and for them to have to show you the return on investment because they have the analytics. So that's part. So if your yield can be X greater, if your costs of materials can be X less. I mean, those are the kinds of things. And farmers have been in business a long time. They kind of know this.
Okay. I think we've gone through most of my questions or all my questions here. The last one for, metaverse versus digital, and not versus, but and digital twins is, what didn't I ask you about that people should know? Is there anything that, is still sitting out there?
So I think in this moment in time, and it's always a moment in time, metaverse has taken a little bit of a backseat because it's expensive to build in the metaverse. And if you go visit the metaverses, other than Roblox and Fortnite, they're kind of empty, lonely places. I think what you're seeing instead are 3D tours. Immersive. I want to go to the art museum. I want to go to Paris. I want to go to the Hilton and find out what my room looks like. And then after I see it, I'll book it. So those are going to be the metaverse experiences. I want to see my Gucci dress and I'll buy it in the fall when it comes out. And so you're going to see a lot of retail experiences in particular that sort of it's almost a try before you buy, but virtual. What has taken over, of course, we have the attention span of fleas, and what's taken over the dialogue now is artificial intelligence, which is related, but not.
Thank you, Robin. We really appreciate this very enlightening conversation. We've been talking with Robin Raskin, the founder of the Virtual Events Group, speaker, advisor, consultant, all those different roles that you play over the years, magazine editor even. So kind of a fit into our world even a little bit. So thank you very much for your time.
Yeah, you just don't have to worry. My tomatoes are really puny. My gardening is lackluster at best. So, but thank you so much. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. Feel good and stay safe, okay?
Thank you. We'll talk again soon. Thank you, Robin, for joining us today and the discussion on the metaverse and digital twins and how those technologies will be changing agriculture in the future. Thank you to our audience for listening, for tuning in today. And please join us next time when we talk with Arthur Erickson, the CEO of Helio, a drone manufacturer, where we will learn about how drones are changing agriculture even as we speak.